So that last show, the quality was bad. The audio, the stories, the running order. It was just a car crash.
Oh well, sorry you feel that way. I mean, we've done the best we could with the podcast.
What do you mean we? I'm talking about the Smashing Security podcast.
To the Host Unknown podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you are. Join us and welcome to episode 119.3 of the Host Unknown podcast. As you can probably gather, Andy is not with us this week. So this week, the role of Andrew Agnes will be played by Mr. Javad Malik.
Yeah, heaven knows that's a tough role to fill.
Yeah. Well, it's a big role to fill.
Yeah.
Well, it's just big.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Jeff, how are you?
I am dying with man flu.
Have you got bird
I've
flu?
I've got man flu. Hopefully it's not bird.
Oh, my God, it really is serious.
It is serious. It's worse than bird flu, COVID. It's worse than monkey pox. It's the absolute worst.
In fact, it's monkey pox, COVID and bird flu all rolled into one, isn't it?
Yeah, don't.
I mean, you might as well just give birth. It would be less painful.
Oh, yeah, of course. Birth is so easy. It's overrated. I mean, like...
Can't be that bad. I mean, there's a lot of us on the planet.
There is. And
quick disclaimer, these are jokes, by the way. These are not the honest held beliefs of this team.
Oh, well, no. Tom actually does hold on to these beliefs. Let's cancel him, everybody.
What, again? So how's your week been?
So my week's been okay. I was actually, like, took advantage of the long weekend that we had, because Monday... there was a bank holiday here in the UK, and as you're well aware that, and as I keep telling all of my colleagues in America, the Queen forbids us from working on a bank holiday. So even if I wanted to, I'm not allowed by law to reply to any emails. But I took a couple of extra days off, and the whole family went up to Bournemouth Beach for a few days.
Oh, right, yeah. Bournemouth's nice.
It was very nice. Very nice, yeah. The hotel we stayed in, And this is where, you know, this is why people say, you know, why do people have issues delegating tasks? And I'll tell you why I have issues delegating tasks. So there's family friends of ours, and we normally go together because, like, kids get on and, you know, whatever. Everyone's got some company. And I let the gentleman, who shall remain nameless, book everything. And I think he managed to book us into a hotel in 1989. It was absolutely dire. It was terrible. I will send you some pics, Tom. But it's like, you know, when you're a kid and you know, in the 70s and 80s, you have those floral pattern carpets and really, really dated bed sheets. It was... really, really bad.
Please tell me there was a cathode ray tube television.
No, they were modern TVs, but they were so small. It was like a 13-inch TV on the wall, and it had, like, the old aerial cable and a cable TV cable coming in, and it was the trunking was like there's plastic trunking on the outside of the wall that hadn't even been painted.
The sort of thing you do when you rent a house.
Yes. Yes. And what was it? The TV remote didn't have a cover for the battery thing, so it was just a sellotape around it. It was honestly the worst thing ever. But then I picked up the news and I saw that Tom Langford had died. So then I felt a bit better about myself.
Yes, it's true. I got a Google alert yesterday saying that Thomas Langford died peacefully a few days prior. And I was like, oh, my God, is this like The Sixth Sense? You know, am I just walking around interacting with people and thinking that I'm alive? You know, but no, this particular gentleman was born a little after me in 1922.
Oh, young chap. Wow.
Yes, exactly. No stamina. No stamina whatsoever. But yes, it was. It was an interesting one. It was pondering one's own mortality through my namesake. I think it was in the US somewhere, actually.
Well, rest in peace, Mr. Langford.
Yes, indeed. 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 So are you, you do sound a little under the weather. So are you going to be doing many of the stories today, or should I just throw them all your way, none your way?
Well, you can throw some my way. how legible I will be, or how much sense I'll make won't be much. So as you said in the beginning, I am playing fully the role of Andrew Agnes today. I am a method actor, yes. So I'll even give no value whatsoever.
And in fact, we haven't even decided who's doing what stories, have we yet? So
no,
who knows what could happen?
While we decide about that, how was your week?
It was very good. It was very good. I in London, Tuesday to yesterday. Busy days, busy evenings. It was good. It was very good fun. Making progress. You know, it's slow and steady wins the race, but we're slowly getting there. So yes, what I guess what I'm saying is I haven't been fired yet.
Well, you know, if you are thinking you're going to get fired, look at what Mudge has done and just copy the playbook. Your last 90 days, just think of it like that in every aspect. So start gathering material to throw your employer
just
under the bus.
Just start stealing stuff, basically.
Should they want to fire, should they end up firing you?
Yeah, so take a hard drive in and start storing all those documents.
Well, I'm not going into the hows and the whats and the whys. I'm just talking about principles. And...
Yeah, you don't want to get technical, because I know you're not too technical, are you?
What's a hard drive?
What are these electronic records? yeah, I know. And apparently the fat orangutan incriminated himself on his Truth Social platform, didn't he?
Apparently so. I have not read into any of that, but
so he showed a picture, and then basically said, "This is not how the files were stored. They were stored in cartons, and the FBI just threw them down on the floor to photographically share what they found. We weren't even allowed in the room while they did this. So you admit to having them in your possession then?" Oh man! So you know, any future employers of me, I will not admit to having any previous employers' documents on me.
A wise move. Wise move.
Indeed, indeed. Shall we see what we've got coming up for you today? With some proper music playing at the moment as well. I might hasten to add, none of this modern noisy rubbish that was on there last week. So this week in InfoSec takes us on a trip down InfoSec memory lane. Rant of the week takes phoning a friend to a new level. Billy Big Ball says you can edit history to your liking. Industry News brings us the latest and greatest security news stories from around the world. And Tweet of the Week gives us applicable wisdom from Sun Tzu. Okay, so let's go to our favourite part of the show, the part of the show that we like to call...
This Week in InfoSec.
Why don't we split this? Why don't you take the first one and I'll take the second one? I think the second one's definitely more my line.
Oh, my God. Just because it's easier. It's not as technical. I only know the second story as well, but OK. The first story takes us to 30th of August, 1999, a mere 23 years ago. The previously unknown group, Hackers Unite, claimed responsibility for disclosing a vulnerability in Hotmail that granted access to its all of its users, roughly 50 million email accounts. Now, these guys were not malicious hackers. They announced the whole to the Swedish media.
Well, it was the '90s. None of the hackers in the '90s were malicious, right?
No, they weren't. They basically disclosed the whole to the Swedish media to draw attention to what they say is Microsoft's spotty security reputation. And
it was the '90s, so yes, it was.
Yes. They said that we did not do this hack to destroy. We want to show the world how bad the security on Microsoft really is, and that the company nearly have monopoly on all computer software, a 21-year-old Swedish member of the group said, whose nickname is Darkwing. And what is
Darkwing? Is it Dick Grayson? And he graduates from Robin and becomes Darkwing.
Ah, yes, I saw that on Titans.
Yes, that's right, superhero. Yes. I think it's Dick Grayson, it's one of them anyway.
Yeah, it's one of them, yeah. I think it is Dick, yeah. But, you know, how little has changed. I think this is still an issue that many researchers, we call them researchers these days, security researchers run into these days, is that they find a vulnerability, they try to disclose it, they don't really get very far with it, they then go public with it, and then this whole, you know, argument ensues. With the bigger companies, I think with the advent of bug bounties and what have you, things have slightly gotten better. But, you know, this mentality or this whole underlying issue still, still happens. And what was interesting is in this story, which was on Wired, that they said that Microsoft started scrambling to fix the problem at 2 a.m. on the day it was released and had an initial fix up at 10 a.m.
Wow.
And a subsequent variant of the problem was fixed around noon. So within about 10 hours, you know, Microsoft had fixed the issue. And then the incident, and this is something that I think is relevant, and it's relevant then as it is today, the incident did not faze Wall Street. In the late afternoon trading, Microsoft's stock was at $92.25, down 1 point. So, security incidents didn't cause any issues back then. They don't today. And 13 years later, Microsoft rebranded Hotmail, renaming it to Outlook.
Yeah. It was very confusing when Outlook first came out, I must admit.
It was.
Hang on, Outlook.com, but Outlook is my mail client. That's not what... It was very odd. I mean, a 10-hour fix is actually not bad. It's just a shame that they did it on the back of being told about it, and then it going public.
Yeah. Exactly.
But then again, what year was it that Bill Gates went on his security spree, as it were? That was a few years later after that, wasn't it? The early noughties?
Trustworthy computing one? 2002?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the trustworthy computing, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Google, for saving me.
Oh, dear. Right, well, I'm going to take the second one. So, 31st of August 2014 is probably a date etched into many male teenagers' brains because it was, for many of them, probably some kind of sexual awakening, subsequently branded the Fappening. A fap being a euphemism for a little bit of self-love. So the user of the message board 4chan posted leaked photos of actress Jennifer Lawrence and numerous other celebrities. And it turns out that these were photos that were stored on, I think it was iCloud, wasn't it?
It was.
They didn't have 2FA or MFA enabled on the accounts. And I'm trying to remember now how the passwords actually got out. I think it was just a bit of good old cracking. But as a result, there was a flood of images of naked, semi-naked, suggestively posed photographs of various celebrities. Obviously, a huge kickback in the media. But what I remember most from this was actually the thing that, Jav, you take a lot of pleasure in doing, which is the victim blaming that came out of it. And everybody's... Smitty. Sorry, what?
Excuse me.
I was waiting for you to pick up on that.
The only victim I'd blame is when you get hit by a bus.
See, listeners, we see his true colours come out when he hasn't got Andy to temper him. No, seriously, there was a huge amount of victim blaming. Oh, these celebrities shouldn't be complaining if they, you know, those photos wouldn't have been leaked if they hadn't taken them, etc., etc. But of course, it was a massive breach of privacy, and I think it was probably one of the first things, incidents of its nature that paved the way for things like revenge porn laws and things like that, so that it is actually illegal to post nude photos without the person's explicit approval, etc. So it was a good thing in a sense, but very, very dramatic at the time, and it definitely made mainstream news as well.
Yeah. No, it was a really, really unfortunate incident. And, you know, it was really sad for all the people impacted, because there were so many celebrities in that. And it's just like, you know, these were personal pictures that people took for their partners or for themselves or what have you. And, you know, and it's not the first time something like this has happened, because, like, you know, everyone's heard about, like, you know, the Pam and Tommy tape that got stolen. Or the what was that Blue Peter presenter, the one who had his video leaked as well, and then he
had a threesome, didn't he?
Yeah. And anyway, these things have, but I think there's a sheer volume and the ease at which these pictures were accessed, and I think there might have been some what do you call it, some PA or some publicity sort of shared accounts, basically, with their PAs or their publicist.
That's right, yeah.
or agency or what have you, that caused it, so which is why they couldn't set up MFA on it. And sometimes it's just really easy to forget how, like, you take a picture and everything's suddenly, like, uploaded from your camera roll to iCloud and synchronized across every device and what have you.
Yes.
As you've experienced.
Been there, done that.
In the past, yes. So... So yeah, I think it's right that, you know, we've had all these laws like revenge porn and everything put out there, but it's just so difficult. Like, for the average person out there, they enable all their sharing features as default anyway, because it's easy. If you lose your phone, if you get a new phone, everything's still there. If you move from your phone to your desktop, everything's still there. I actually read this story not too long ago about these parents, and they were worried about a spot on their son's private area, somewhere around there was a spot or a boil or something. So the father took a picture, sent it to his wife, and she sent it to the doctor.
That's right, it was an infant, wasn't it?
Yes. Guys, you know, getting caught up in all sort of child porn sort of accusations.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, the moment we as a society move away from objectifying naked bodies and, you know, personal lives, the better, to be honest with you. I mean, geez, it's not like we haven't got one of our own, is it?
No, I mean, I objectify myself every day and that's all I need.
Quick 30 seconds every morning, then a shower. Excellent, thank you. That was this week's...
This week in InfoSec.
In 2021, you voted us the most entertaining cybersecurity content amongst our peers. In 2022, you crowned us the best cybersecurity podcast in Europe. You are listening to the double award-winning Host Unknown podcast. How'd you like them apples?
Indeed. Right, let's get to the angry part of the show, shall we? And it's the part of the show that we call...
Listen up!
Rant of the week.
It's time to motherf***ing rage!
All right, I'm going to take this one, as is tradition. So, 5 mobile banking apps put 300,000 users' digital fingerprints at risk. How, you might ask? Well, as I rapidly try and read ahead on this document, what actually happened was, these apps, they contained private data, biometric digital fingerprints used by these apps. And it was basically down to developers leaving hard-coded credentials in their code, in their Amazon Web Services code. So Symantec found this out. It's their threat hunter team. And it discovered 1,859 publicly available apps, both Android and iOS, containing baked-in AWS credentials. So just to sort of make it a little bit more simple, applications have to talk to other servers and other services, and you need credentials to do that. A shortcut when you're developing, in the early stages of developing, is to type into the code rather than using an API or some, you know, far more secure approach. You just type into the code, log in with this username, log in with this password. There's no 2FA or any other kind of authentication used. The problem with this, of course, is that username and password is stored in clear text. And if you look at the code, you've got the password. So I won't say it's a perfectly valid way of developing applications, because I don't think it is, but it's a very common way of doing it. And in 99% of the cases, when the code is moved from build into testing, those credentials are removed and proper authentication protocols are put in place. So with that data available, it doesn't take much to find out these credentials. Interestingly, the vast majority, 98% of these, were iOS apps. Now, this is interesting because iOS apps have to go through really quite a rigorous testing procedure through Apple. In fact, it's quite draconian in some cases, with plenty of developers complaining about how strict it is. But notwithstanding that, which I think is probably another rant, 77% of those apps contained AWS access tokens that allowed access to private AWS cloud services, meaning, therefore, that all of the data in those Amazon S3 buckets and cloud services, etc., was available to anybody who could fairly easily find these credentials and log on to them. And 5 of these were mobile banking apps. Now, mobile banking, or banking generally, is probably one of the most regulated and scrutinized areas of our internet activity, given the really quite devastating impact it can have when things go wrong. So to have these 5 banks creating applications and, in theory, quality testing them and quality assurance of them and security testing them, and not realizing that something as fundamental as having open clear text credentials within them, not finding that, is frankly inexcusable. And I do hope that these banks will be held account to this, because the level of suffering this can result in for the end user is awful. You know, loss of virtually everything. You know, it could result in the loss of the house, loss of job, loss of loss of income, loss of savings. etc., etc. Absolutely, life destroying. So if you're one of those five banks and you're listening, come and sponsor the Host Unknown podcast so you can put your side of the story across.
So just to clarify, I thought all of these only store the fingerprint hashes and not the actual fingerprint data itself.
Well, I think that's the idea, right?
Yeah, I'd be very surprised. I mean, I find it really surprising if they are actually 300,000.
But I think the point is they're baked in credentials, so you could ostensibly cut and paste them and they're valid, rather than actually using some kind of proper authentication process.
I will have to read this in more detail. I'm not disputing the fact this is a rant-worthy topic. I think broken authentication, exposed AWS buckets and stuff is terrible. I'm not entirely convinced that the headline is doing justice to the severity of the issue. That's where I'm losing a bit of it. But then I am on death's bed with man flu, so I could be reading this wrong.
So so in one case, a provider of internet and communication services gave out a mobile SDK, a software development kit, to its customers to use to access its platform. That SDK contained the provider's cloud infrastructure keys, exposing all of its customers' data, including financial records, employee information, other information, etc., that was stored on the platform. And the reason it did that was because the SDK had hard-coded AWS tokens to access an Amazon-powered translation service. So they provided this SDK to gain access to one part of their services. However, the token itself granted access to everything, all of those providers' back-end systems, rather than just the translation tool.
That course. That happens a lot in misconfigured AWS buckets.
Yeah.
That's not the issue. I was just curious about the fingerprints and whether they're actually fingerprints or if they're properly hashed and, I assume, salted, then, you know, it's not so much of a big deal. I mean, it's data leakage.
It's a big deal because you can still rainbow table those hashes.
Well, not if they're being salted.
If they have.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be really surprised if someone's just using a shot. But okay, I take that back. Nothing surprises me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I do think that, you know, yes, there's mistakes we made. And if you're writing a little, you know, shitty tank game for iOS, you could possibly be forgiven for this, as long as you're not taking, you know, payment data and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, a mobile banking app that you install and you provide your data through, which then in the background exposes it to, you know, to anybody who's got access to that SDK, for instance, it is just inexcusable.
Rant of the week. Attention. This is a message for all other InfoSec podcasts.
Busted.
We caught you listening again. This is the Host Unknown podcast.
Okay, it's now time to move on to this week's Billy Sick Balls.
So, Twitter has started testing a drumroll edit button.
Oof, only taken a decade.
Yeah, and it's probably the most highly requested feature. There have been years and years of memes and jokes and everything and what have you. The feature is currently undergoing internal testing. But the Billy Big Balls move here is you have to pay for it. It's only available to some Twitter Blue subscribers later this month.
What?
Yes. So, you know, it's...
So Twitter have finally started to monetize their app and they've decided to do it on the singular most requested function in the history of Twitter.
Yes. Yes.
Bastards.
Exactly. And, you know, it's... If Twitter has nothing, they have the audacity. Let's just put it that way.
The audacity.
The audacity. Ah, I see what you did there. That's very good.
Mr. Dorsey, hey?
Yes. Yes, we got the joke, Tom. No need to explain it and devalue it.
Yeah, but listeners might have. You know the average intelligence of one of our listeners, right?
Okay.
You were telling me this just before the show.
Oh, man, this is such a car wreck. Andy, where are you? I'll come back.
I'm kicking a man while he's down. It's so easy.
So the feature apparently is going to be a bit like how Facebook has a Twitter feature. So there will be some metadata there. It will show you that it's last been edited. And you probably can click on it and it might give you some info as to what was edited.
I hope so. I have to say I hope so, because otherwise we're going to be in a realm of people rewriting history here, right?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, this got me thinking, and we sort of like going to go a bit off track here, because that was all I was going to talk about on that. But,
and it's our show and we can do what we want.
Yeah, but there's something about editing and the standards about retroactively going and changing stuff. So you see normally in a good blog or public or journalistic publication, they will have at the top like edit updated, show story updated to include names of so-and-so or details of so-and-so. So it's not like you can't go back and edit something, but you should give the full trail, so to speak, so that
yes,
things are kept, you know, the integrity is maintained, like the blockchain. but then I was reading a few weeks ago that Stranger Things, and I've not seen the show yet, but there were some continuity errors in some of their earlier episodes. And what they went is they went back and they fixed them digitally and then pushed them down. So now if you start watching Stranger Things, you'll get the correct version. It's like a patch on your TV show. So, you know, sometimes you see like, oh, there was a coffee cup left in there. So what they might do is like digitally remove the coffee cup and then push it out to Netflix and say, okay, now there is no coffee cup. So, haha.
Or like, was it cargo shorts guy in The Mandalorian?
Yeah, exactly. So all that kind of stuff. And Kindle or digital books have been doing this for a while as well. So if there's something that is incorrect, like a formatting issue, rather than publish a whole new edition or version, you just silently push it out. So it's edited, which is from a convenience point of view and what have you, I get it. The problem is you can easily see how this stuff can get misused, especially by some regimes and what have you, to edit history. And without the proper trail or evidence or the integrity maintained, you could end up with some pretty dodgy stuff, or you could have like text, you know, oh, this, we do not believe in evolution. We believe in so-and-so. Therefore, this textbook now must be edited. And, you know, imagine a government changing that so that the curriculum suddenly changes and, you know, so you don't even need to go and burn books or change documentaries or what have you. If the powers that be say, this is how we want it to be reflected, you can start making small, small changes. And I think that's...
So we're not going to have big book burning parties. We're going to have book editing parties.
Yeah, you just click the button and it just silently pushes out to every device out there.
It's not quite so dramatic, though, is it?
No,
I mean, let's have a bonfire anyway, right? That seems to be the answer to most things.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's all I'm saying. With the Twitter edit button, I'm glad that there's some sign there that apparently it will show you that it's been edited, but you need to have think about how it could be misused and what you're going to do about it.
Yeah, and I think you're right. As long as there is some kind of chain there, as long as there is some kind of record that shows this is what it was originally and this is what was changed, and a bit like Wikipedia does.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because I remember, like, years ago using Facebook, and then there's this joke, what you could do, you could post a status saying something really upbeat, like, oh, you know, I got a promotion at work.
Yeah.
And then you wait for your friend to say, oh, congratulations, that's really good to hear. And then you edit your post to say, my cat just died. And then you reply to them and say, you're so insensitive. And as a joke, it's fine. But, you know, you could see
that's exactly what you could do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all right, it. Mr. Dorsey, if you're listening, come on, man. It's not good. Not cool.
Billy Big Balls of the Week. Feeling overloaded with actionable information?
Yep.
Fed up receiving well-researched, factual security content? Yes. Ask your doctor if the Host Unknown podcast is right for you.
Always read the label, never double dose on episodes. Side effects may include nausea, eye rolling, and involuntary swearing in anger.
All right. So without Andy here, we haven't got anybody to tell us the time, have we, really?
Well, I don't know. I know that it's been at least 4 hours since my last paracetamol, so I can have some more, I think. But it's also that time of the show where we head over to our news sources over at the InfoSec PA Newswire, who have been very busy bringing us the latest and greatest security news from around the globe.
Industry news.
Cryptominer disguised as Google Translate targeted 11 countries.
Industry news.
Baker & Taylor's system remains offline a week after ransomware attack.
Industry news.
ICO pursues traffic accident data thieves.
Industry news.
UK imposes tough new cybersecurity rules for telecom providers.
Industry news.
Evil Corp and Conti leaked to Cisco data breach, eCentire suggests.
Industry news.
Golang-based malware campaign relies on James Webb Telescope's image.
Industry news.
Microsoft finds account takeover bug in TikTok.
Industry news.
Standards body publishes guidelines for IoT security testing.
Industry news.
Apple releases update for iOS 12 to patch exploited vulnerability.
Industry news.
And that was this week's
industry news.
Wow.
Huge if true. I tell you what, I'm going to struggle. Where am I going to get my bread and buns and my shirts made this week if all their systems are offline?
Yeah. I have no idea.
And who the hell are Baker and Taylor? I've never heard of them.
Don't know. Now we've got to find out. They're like one of the country's like most, you know, used, you know, milk delivery float system or something. And like
milk delivery float system. Wow, man, you are sick with the fever at the moment, aren't you?
Oh.
Apparently, Baker & Taylor, a library services company. So what do they do? It still doesn't say. Library. Oh, quite literally, libraries, as in where people go to read books and stuff. Well, that's not good. I mean, talk about hitting people where it hurts the most, you know, because libraries are places where, you know, if you don't have access to a computer, or if you can't afford, you know, books to buy and stuff like that, or kids will go there if they haven't got anywhere else to go, if parents are working. If their systems are offline, that's really destructive to the people who can least afford it. So whichever gang did that, you bastards. Just saying.
Yeah. Evil Corp and Conti leaked to Cisco data breach. And then that's eCentire suggests. This is like, I'm sure Cisco would have a good idea as to who it would, because they have got all the data as to what happened and what have you. And they're looking externally, like a pundit, like at these football games, saying, oh, I think if they had done this, if the manager had done this, I don't know. I just thought it was a very funny headline. eSentai concludes its advisory, providing a series of suggestions to help companies protect their systems from cyber attacks. These include having offline backup copies and using multi-factor authentication.
Oh, please.
That's the whole story, you Muppets. That's how they got breached.
You and I are both... I have been, and you are in this space where actually, you know, you're always looking outwards as a company to see where you can sort of provide, where you can get your name out in the press, right, at the end of the day. But, you know, if you do it right, you do it in a way that is actually valuable, etc. It seems like somebody at eSentire has gone, there's a story, what can we say about it? Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, if it's actually what happened, but we need to say something that's going to get us to the top of the, you know, top of the reading list. And it's like, utterly irrelevant.
It is. It is indeed. And good to see the ICO is really cracking down on the hardened criminals here. Alleged illegal activity took place between December 2014 and November 2017, so a three-year crime spree, where eight individuals conspired to steal personal data from vehicle repair garages. They stole the data in order to generate potential leads for personal injury insurance claims.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. So,
I mean, good that the ICO is doing something, but if they feel a little bit like HMRC at the moment, they're going after the little people because it's easier.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. And I get it. Everyone should abide by the law. Everyone should pay their fare. Tax which is due, or whatever tax Jimmy Carr's accountant says is due.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, go after the ones that are stealing billions.
Exactly. It's like they say, if you owe your bank £100, you know, your bank, you're the one who's in trouble. If you owe the bank £100 million, it's the bank that's in trouble.
I see what you're saying. We need more credit cards.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm gonna do a whole bunch of credit card applications. I'm gonna write a script so that they all hit at the same time, such that when it checks my credit reference, the credit reference is still valid, but they're all hitting at the same time, so they're all gonna get accepted. Would that work? We need Andy to tell us.
Well, we love how you started off the fiction by saying, I'm going to write a script. That's going to...
By which I mean, I'm going to go on to Fiverr. Oh, dear. Excellent. Well, that was this week's...
Industry News. You're listening to the double award-winning Host Unknown podcast.
Right, we come crashing into the last part of the show. And let's get on to it for this week's...
Tweet of the Week.
And we always play that one twice.
Tweet of the Week.
Go on, you can do this one.
Oh, no, go on, you do it.
Okay. All right, so this one, we was a special guest tweeter, actually. So many of you know Sun Tzu, Art of the War, a very ancient Chinese writer that many, many people still like to quote and misquote. And apparently this Sun Tzu has got an actual Twitter account, at Sun Tzu Tiber. God, you don't want to say that without your teeth in, do you? And the tweet goes, the enemy does not check your risk register prior to attacking. Sun Tzu, The Art of Cyber War. Very, very true. Very true. They knew a lot in those ancient Chinese times, didn't they?
They did. Did Sun Tzu say anything about the scope of systems that were they were allowed to attack.
Indeed, the scope of applicability. Absolutely, absolutely. The enemy does not check your risk register, nor, and I think this is the expanded quote, nor care for your scope of applicability.
Yes, 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 yes. That's very good, very good. No, I think it's funny, but it's also very, very true. There's this false sense of security that comes along with, well, we done, you know, this scan, or we managed to get ISO 27001 certified and whatever it might be.
Or but, yeah. we accepted the risk.
that is the magical phrase.
Indeed, and it's true. You know, we do accept the risk on these things, right? Because we have to. It's important. But yeah, very good. That was this week's
tweet of the week.
Blimey, Jav. Just as a piece of advice, every 4 hours you can take paracetamol, and then you can intersperse that 2 hours later with ibuprofen.
Yes. I will be doing that.
So you basically don't need to go more than 2 hours at a time. And it's a great trick, and it'll keep you drugged up throughout the day. So you don't have to. Well, you do have to be careful about what you say. I mean, you might get arrested for something you tweeted at some point. But other than that, you should be fine.
Yes, I should be fine. Yeah, thank you for that.
Folks, keep an eye out for Jav's tweets later today. Anyway, Jav, thank you so much. We filled the time. Do you know what? We barely even mentioned him, did we?
Who?
Exactly. Jav, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Stay secure, my friends.
Stay secure.
You've been listening to the Host Unknown podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, comment and subscribe. If you hated it, please leave your best insults on our Reddit channel.
Worst episode ever.
r/smashing security.
I'm going to go lie down and die now, so.
Mate, thank you for coming. I mean, the thought of running this by myself, my God. I mean, it's boring enough talking to you two alone, let alone me by myself.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time you'd be saying this one to yourself.
Yeah, it's Tuesday.